plan on flying? In order to board domestic flights, your driver's license or state-issued ID must be a real ID. Learn how to get your real ID today at tsa.gov/real ID or visit your local DMV.
Lowe's knows to bring your vision to life, it's important to find the right color. That's why My Lowe's Rewards members get a free paint or exterior stain sample to test your look and find the perfect color to confidently refresh your space. Lowe's, we help, you save. Offer valid in-store only, 5/8 through 5/14. Limit one per customer while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See associate for details. Program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
Steel Magnolias, two sisters who love family, traditions, and all things Southern. We've got plenty of room at our table, so pull up a chair.
Hey, Lainey.
Hi, Laura Beth.
Well, I made an observation a couple of weeks ago that I wanted to mention, and it was around the time we've been doing some giveaways lately on our Instagram.
Yes.
And
we're so fun.
I know. Yes. So just there's the plug, right? To follow us on Instagram. That's not what I was meaning to do at all, but you should. But the last couple of times that I have messaged the winner and asking for their mailing address to send them the prize, I've gotten such over-the-top excitement from them because yes. Both of them have said, I've never won anything.
Oh, that's fun.
And
that
I just
get to be there first.
Well, I just started thinking, like, is that true of a lot of people? I don't know. It was something I was pondering lately, going, are there a lot of people out there that have never won anything? I don't know. What do you think?
I've heard that before. I've heard people say that before.
Yeah,
I've never won anything life changing in the sense of like a car or a trip or anything like that.
Yeah,
but I mean, I've won a dinner here or a $20 gift card there, kind of thing.
Yeah,
so I certainly couldn't be one that says I've never won anything.
Yeah,
man, I would love to. You know, be able to continue to give prizes to people that change that.
Well, I was going to say, I hope that continues
like
to be responses.
Randomly pick.
Right.
But that's fun that that's changing the
I won Wheel of Fortune. So I've gone such to an extreme of winning.
That's so true.
I mean, I do absolutely still appreciate a free meal. And, you know, just I still coupon and I still, you know, go in for a.
But not many people can say they've been to Hawaii and Switzerland on Wheel of Fortune's tab. Yeah, you did pay the taxes. But other than that.
But anyway, so I just was curious about, like, wonder how many people out there could easily say, I've never won anything. So anyway, if you haven't, start entering our contest.
Seriously. We get some fun stuff.
Because we're on a streak of first-time winners. So anyway, well, we have a fun topic today, mainly because, wow, what an eye-opener this topic was. I'd never even heard of this group till you mentioned doing an episode on this.
So we're going to talk today about a group of artists called the Florida Highwaymen.
Yes.
And I just thought this would be a fun topic. We try to go all over the place, all over the South, all over different directions. Mm-hmm. I know our listeners love when we talk about food, but we can't always talk about food or we'd have to, you know, be a food podcast.
That's right.
So we're going to go art today.
But how do you remember, how did you even come up with this as being an idea? Like, how did you find out about the Florida Highwaymen?
Great question. And I actually don't remember the answer to that. Now, I keep in my notes of my phone a running list of topic ideas.
Yes.
And it is long, y'all.
Yes.
We are not short of ideas of subjects. But, you know, I just like to go in lots of directions.
Yeah.
And I read a little snippet about this. It didn't go in great detail.
Okay.
But I was intrigued.
Piqued your interest.
Yeah,
enough.
And I am an art lover.
Yes, you are.
So I wanted to know more about this. Now, this particular style is not a style that's my favorite that I would want to hang in my home.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still beautiful art,
right?
And it's fun subject matter because it's tells history. I think, you know, art often shares snippets of history.
It does.
And this really does.
Yeah. Preserves it well too, because words can't be switched out. That's and true. You know, it's like,
very true.
It is what it is. It's That's you true. Know, like, there's no changing it. So,
well, first I want to say that this name, Florida Highwaymen, they weren't called this until the mid 90s. So we'll get to that.
Yeah.
How the name came about.
Yeah.
But they were a thing.
They were a
it
group.
Was a thing.
Yes. Yeah. So they got this started back in the late 1950s, right?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't even know late. I don't know when in the 50s. I just know it was in the 50s.
Okay. They were self-taught African-American artists, right?
There was a, there ended up being what they've named 26 of them.
Okay.
But there was kind of a core, more core beginning group.
Okay.
That I think was made up of only about six.
Okay.
Maybe
I think there was six.
Eight.
Yeah. Yeah.
Only one woman in this 26.
The Lone Ranger.
So there was a Florida Highway woman as well. But I'm just so intrigued by this. So do you want me just to kind of dive in?
Yeah.
So I wanted to make sure and say that kind of what I read as the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that it was a teacher that recognized a student's gifting. So Zenobia Jefferson was Alfred Hare's high school teacher.
Mm-hmm.
She recognized his talent in painting and suggested that he seek out a man with the last name Bacchus.
Yes.
Who was a famous artist, and he was white.
He was white.
He was
yeah.
landscape painter. So anyhow, he kind of looks him up, and so did Harold Newton, who was also another one of the
mm-hmm.
beginning Florida highwaymen. Mm-hmm. So these two kind of seek this man out, Bacchus, and go and meet with him. And he kind of became a mentor, particularly to Alfred Hare.
Right.
I think several of these guys end up kind of watching how Bacchus paints, but he was truly a mentor to this Alfred Hare.
Mm-hmm.
So anyhow, he kind of took him under his wing, showed him some things about landscape painting. Now, one thing I found fascinating was, now keep in mind, y'all, this is in the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
Bacchus, when he would sell a painting, we're talking maybe it would sell for $250, $300.
Wow.
Okay? And it takes him, you know, days.
Sure.
To paint.
Sure.
So Alfred Hare is watching this going, okay, what if I could do them faster and cheaper?
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm faster and cheaper,
mm-hmm.
I can still make $250, $300.
Right.
Just not for one. I'm going to have to have maybe 10
yes. yeah.
paintings.
Yeah.
So his brain's thinking like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, also keep in mind, this is in the South. This is mm-hmm. in the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
A black artist, sadly, is not going to be able to be in an art gallery.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
sad. And this is also at a time, I would say, that a lot of the black population were not artists. They were on citrus farms.
Apparently, that was the thing. You know, these people are from an area called Fort Pierce.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what their jobs were.
Yeah.
Was working the citrus groves.
They were immersed in fighting for civil rights. They were, yeah.
So he's kind of thinking, wow, I'd really like to make a living doing art, but I can't be in art galleries.
Right.
And I don't know how I would even sell this to.
Yeah.
And most of the people that had the extra money to buy art were white.
Right. Yeah.
So he's kind of thinking through how to do this.
And Fort Pierce is on the east coast of Florida, about halfway down the state. So just to give you kind of some perspective, because I'd never even heard of Fort Pierce before this
either.
So,
well, they decide we're going to do this cheaper and faster, and we're going to sell a bunch of paintings.
Yeah.
So this is kind of how it was birthed.
Yeah.
And one of the things that they were known for doing, this group, was they would spread out their works of art, which, mm-hmm. let's go ahead and talk about what they painted on how they did that.
Yeah.
Because I think this is interesting.
Yeah.
To maximize their profits,
yeah.
they painted on Upson board.
just which is like a plywood,
like a roofing of, thing. Yeah. I think it's like a roofing.
Yeah. A build, definitely board. Just used for building at the time, building materials.
So they're going to use that instead of canvas. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of these framing, pieces were like to true framing was pretty expensive.
Sure.
Still so is. They figured let's just make it out of molding. Mm-hmm. We can make them out of molding.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's what they did. Yeah. They would make these to be their,
yep.
That was medium.
How they framed it. Yeah. Yeah.
That's
yeah.
their medium. And they're going to paint. They did mostly use oil paint. It was rumored yeah. that they even used house paint. I think that was pretty minimal from
okay.
some things I was reading. It was mostly oil paint. And sometimes they even painted out onto the frame. I think there was a couple of them that, like, if they were painting a landscape, it even went out onto the frame.
That's kind of fun.
So kind of yeah. different, something yeah. you don't usually see.
Yeah. And I had read sometimes they were painting them so fast. Like
they weren't even dry.
They weren't even dry yet. So they had, so, they would get messed up.
That's or, right. Or yeah. sometimes it would have like their fingerprint
uh-huh.
in the paint.
Uh-huh.
So that's funny. Because you would never see that on a Rembrandt or something. No. Oh, my word. So, I want to get to something about that. There was a man named Al Black that I want to talk about okay. later.
Okay.
And I'll try to remember to tell a piece of that with the wet paint.
Okay.
But yeah, so they would also shellac these and, you know, just have them pretty close to done and sell them out of their cars. This is what I think is so wild. Yeah. They would go.
Because they couldn't get in the galleries.
Because they couldn't be in a yeah. gallery. So what are we going to do? Pile up the trunk and go sell them.
Yeah.
And so they would intentionally go to places like office buildings that needed art, even motels, stuff like that.
Very entrepreneurial, for sure.
Very entrepreneurial. Yeah. And even tourists loved them because these are landscapes of Florida.
Yeah, it's like an oversized postcard.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I want to get into kind of what the paintings were of in yeah. a minute. But that's in a nutshell what their medium was.
And then did we say yet what they were selling them for?
No. Okay. So typically these paintings at that time were selling for $25 to $35.
Yeah.
So there again, Mr. Hare was kind of smart. If I can yep. sell 10 for $25
yeah.
or $35, I'm making as much as Bacchus for his one
yeah.
that's taking days
right.
to paint.
Yeah. yeah.
I think that's so fascinating. And one other thing I'll say about technique, because I kind of started this, some of them would spread out. Let's say they had six of those mm-hmm. Upson boards out. They do all the skies at one time.
It's like mass manufacturing.
It's kind of. Absolutely. Assembly line yeah. thing happening. Then yeah. we're going to do all of the grass or yeah. whatever. So, you know, they get their paint colors they want.
Yeah.
And every single one of them's different.
Right.
It's not like we're painting the exact same thing six times. But they're all going to have a sky.
Yeah.
Most of them have water feature. You know, we're all going to do the water. So I just think that's so wild. They were just thinking, how can we maximize the profit?
That's so smart. Okay, so let's just start paint the picture of what were they painting, right? So
yeah.
what was their go-to sort of themes?
Well, so they were in Florida where there's much beautiful landscape. So most of the time these were beaches, marshes, water birds, palm trees.
I have in my head exactly, without even needing to see these, what these are. Because I feel like people have copied this today.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
A lot.
Yeah. And they may have copied even things, you know, somewhat that they had seen.
Like, if you've ever been to a Caribbean country,
totally.
You have seen this.
This looks totally Caribbean.
Yeah.
We've both been to Haiti.
Yeah.
You see paintings like yeah. this all over
but
Haiti.
But I saw it all over the Bahamas and the Dominican Republic.
True. So. And, you know, another thing you see in coastal areas, in fact, we even talked about this when we did our episodes on architecture.
Yeah.
Is you see more bright color.
Yes.
So these paintings often included a lot of bright color.
Yeah.
But they painted from memory. They were never looking at photographs of
That's cool.
these scenes.
That's cool.
And that is really cool. And a lot of times they would even include sunsets.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes the sunsets I noticed were like incredibly vibrant,
right,
with bright paint.
Right.
And so this is kind of their memory of it. Just yeah. like, you know, I get frustrated when there's a gorgeous sunset and I take a photograph and I'm like, not at all what this looks
like.
No
justice. Yeah. Yeah.
You want a paintbrush to mm-hmm. show that it's how bright it
yeah.
is.
Yeah.
These are like over the top.
Yeah.
When they're doing sunsets, very orange
I
or
love
very
it.
Pink.
Yeah.
But one of the reasons that these are so beloved now is because of all of the concrete that's now in Florida and, well, everywhere where there's been development.
So none of it looks like this anymore.
A lot of it doesn't
yeah.
look like it did.
Yeah.
Then, and so people just love these because it's even a memory of what was.
Well, that's funny because that resonates with me. Because when I see old images of Nashville,
yeah,
I'm like, yeah, I remember
that's
when it looked
what
like
I remember.
That.
Yeah. Not this many and condos.
I definitely resonate with, yeah, wanting yeah. to see images of what was.
Of your childhood or mm-hmm. your teen years and that kind of thing. So I love that. And it also really shows a lot of Florida's diverse ecology. It's very varied in different parts.
That is
and
so
they
true.
Have some of the Everglades in there.
Yeah.
And just different things like that.
Yeah.
So, and a lot of that looks different now.
Yeah.
So... that's one of the many reasons these are in high demand now.
Yeah, so we've touched on the fact that they were producing these at like really fast speeds. Did you read like how many have been produced, right?
So, of course, it's kind of just a guesstimation.
Right. Yeah, like nobody was tracking the inventory
sales. So this is
sales.
An interesting thing. One of the things I was reading was, so this went from the mid-50s through, it started to die down in 1970, and I'll tell you why in a moment.
Okay.
But it's an estimated 200,000 works out of the 26 total people.
In just like 2 decades, let's say 2.5.
Yeah.
25 years.
So, and the interesting thing was when these were first purchased.
My eyes are like really big right now. That is so many.
When these were first purchased, people were excited to have them, hanging them in their business office, hanging mm-hmm. them in their home. But then once the kind of 80s, 90s came around, they kind of didn't fit with style and they started going to donation.
Okay.
Into people's attics.
Okay.
Kind of put away the new.
Yeah. They didn't fit that MTV kind of vibe that was moving in.
So,
of all the neons and yeah.
So it's interesting because who knows how many there are. And I was thinking this is the kind of thing you might actually find at a Goodwill. Many of them aren't signed. Some
wow.
of them are.
Yeah.
But some of them aren't. So keep your eyes open. You may want to look what these look like.
I mean, 200,000, they're out there.
That's right.
Yeah. Nobody's hoarding these.
That's right.
I wouldn't think. So, yeah. That's so interesting.
One of the things that I found in researching this topic is there's a man by the name of Gary Monroe.
Yes.
Who's done several, I guess I would call them coffee table books.
Yeah.
About this subject with choosing specific artists to highlight.
Yeah.
So we have to mention Alfred Hare
yeah.
a little more in depth because he's kind of the one who got this going. He's the one who was mentored by Bacchus.
Yes.
And
kind of the founder, right?
Yeah, I would yeah. call him probably the founder of this whole thing. So there's one of the books that he does is specifically on his life. So if you find this interesting, you may want to check out this man's
books. Yeah, I can link to the books in the
yeah,
show notes.
That would be great. So this guy, was actually shot and killed at the age of 29. That happened in 1970.
Right? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So very short life, but lived it to the full in that time. Mm-hmm. And that's why in 1970, when he died, he was kind of the one who was getting everybody organized.
Yeah.
And without him, it kind of started to fall apart.
Yeah.
Different people continued painting,
right.
kind of doing their own thing.
But when you've got somebody that's passionate, that is...
And he's the one who
the
gathered.
One, yeah. Kind of keeping them energized to sell in the way they were selling. And yeah, that's...
So
I didn't realize that he'd been shot and killed. I saw that he'd died so young. And I
it was
like,
in like a juke joint.
Wow.
Where he died. And so, yeah, that kind of was the fall apart of the collective thing. Yeah. But his works are, you know, the from the early Highwaymen days. And he's definitely considered one of the renowned ones. And it was his idea in doing this fast thing. That was all him trying to get that all going. So Alfred Hare. And then I also want to mention a man by the name of Harold Newton.
Yes.
So he's the other one I said did
they both at least meet Bacchus and kind of,
I don't know how much mentoring he actually got, but he at least learned some things from him. And again, whole book on him that Gary Monroe gives him homage. But he apparently really has some of the more beautiful paintings. So Newton was kind of known for doing more of a romantic imagery and an identity of modern Florida.
Yeah, okay.
And I thought this was funny. One of the things that Gary Monroe says in his book about Harold Newton is that he was an enigmatic figure. He lived an artist's life, aloof and prolific while painting, and gregarious and expansive when socializing.
Mm.
And just in watching movies about artists and stuff like that, I thought there really is something to that where they just are so sometimes these huge personalities.
Yeah. Yeah.
When they're socializing and that kind of thing. So there are more of Newton's paintings that remain today than any of the other highwaymen.
Okay.
I thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
And they're kind of showered all over the state. Like, apparently he really
got
all over the place. Yeah. And he's really considered like a central to understanding this style of landscape. You got to look at his works.
Okay.
So.
Well, and he had probably maybe more years to put into it than.
Very true.
I guess it really did sort of.
That's true.
Fizzle out after Hare's death.
But in terms of a collective. But he probably went on and painted more, so that would be why there would be more of his works out there.
Yeah.
And I did think it was interesting that many of these don't have any name to them. Yeah. I think that they, someone who's studied this art may be able to point more to one person or the other. But anyhow, I thought that was interesting that many of them weren't signed.
Well, and Newton is responsible for being the one that taught Mary Ann Carroll, the only female in the group.
I did not know that. Okay. Now,
she started drawing as a young girl.
Okay.
So she already had interest and some skill. But I had read that she'd been drawing when she was a little girl, and then she met Newton, and he had some flames painted on the side of
his car.
His car.
Yes.
And she asked him about the flames. And he said he painted them himself. And he had one of his paintings in the back of his car.
My goodness.
And she was so interested. You know, he told her he did it. And she said, can you teach me how to paint like that? And so so that's how she got folded into the group and was taught by
that's
Newton.
Very cool. Yes, about his car, I had read it had sunsets and all kinds of flames, all kinds of things painted on it, and at one point it was repossessed.
Oh my gosh.
And I thought, what are you gonna do with a car like that? Like, that's hilarious.
That Such would a... be a photograph to capture.
For real. So Mary Ann Carroll, we have to talk about this Steel Magnolia.
Yeah.
Right. excuse me. She sold her first painting at 18.
Wow.
Which is remarkable for any young artist,
yes.
but particularly for a Black woman in the South.
Yes.
Come on. So good. So Mary Ann Carroll, I'm just going to read this quote from Gary Monroe because I thought it was so good.
Okay.
So he said, if the highwaymen faced discrimination at every door they knocked on, then the challenges and dangers were magnified for Carroll. I mean, can you imagine?
Yes.
She took pride in always having her pristine Buick gassed and ready to go, and her small handgun cleaned and ready to use.
Oh my gosh. Wow. She was a pistol.
No pun intended. Or pun intended.
Pun intended.
So she passed away last year. I was thinking, gosh, wouldn't that have been a fun person to have on the podcast?
For real.
Would love to hear her stories.
Yes.
So man, if you can get your hands on a Mary Ann Carroll painting, that would be something to treasure.
Absolutely. I did read a quote from Mary Ann Carroll. She said, "I found there was as many sweet people out there as there was bitter. I just thank God basically for the sweet ones, because everyone that bought a painting put bread on my table, kept shelter over my head, and in the midst of raising 7 children as a single parent, they have been mama and daddy too for me. I am just more than grateful."
Wow.
I know. 7 kids.
7 kids, and she could make a living painting as a woman, a black woman in the South. Yeah. That's so good.
So, you know.
Thank you, Lord, for the good ones.
It's all perspective.
Yeah.
But it's wonderful to hear her say in that time and era that there was as many sweet people as bitter.
That's right. Good. So. You got to keep your eyes on the good ones.
I know. Look for the gold.
Well, let's talk about Al Black.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like he would have been a real character,
I know.
Too.
I do, too.
So he was born in 1946. I think most of these people were around that age.
Yeah.
But he emerged as the salesman par excellence. I don't think he was as great of a painter as he was a salesman.
Yeah. Well, that's true in anything. You know, like the creatives aren't always the great businessmen.
So true.
So
that is so true. Well, he actually found a way for him. He would make commission.
Good.
And because he wasn't a great painter, he at least learned how to repair the paintings when they were put in the trunk still wet.
And they got messed up.
And they got messed up. He could at least kind of do enough to do touch up. I thought that was so funny.
He probably had some bird, signature bird he knew to put on a blotch of paint or something.
That's right. So anyhow, that was kind of his thing in the Highwayman story, was that he was the good salesman. Unfortunately, Black struggled with drugs and eventually went to prison. Mm. So, sad part of his story, but here's a cool little side story. There was a warden at the prison where he was that read a story in the St. Petersburg Times by columnist Jeff Klinkenberg about the highwaymen. And he kind of put it together that Al Black was inmate Black that he had in his prison.
Okay. Wow.
So he talks to him, and not just talks to him, encourages him with permission to paint murals all over the prison.
No way. Oh, wow.
And they're apparently really beautiful scenes that were really encouraging to the inmates.
How amazing. How amazing.
He painted over 100 murals, or at least 100 murals for the Department of Corrections.
Wow. That's funny to think about in terms of today, since murals seems to have made a resurgence.
Seriously, in cities where people, paint them.
Mm-hmm.
Is that not so cool?
Wow.
So anyhow, again, Gary Monroe has a book called The Highwaymen Murals. And it's the only record of these images that are available to the public.
Wow.
So the only way you'll see them, unless That's for some amazing. Reason you were able to get into one of those prisons.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, is that
you want to see them, but you don't.
That's how you want to see them is in this book.
Yeah.
So anyway, that was fascinating to me.
Well,
and it also really got me thinking of just the power of art.
Yeah.
And I wish that we could get that more in the prisons.
Mm-hmm.
There are people in there, some of them even wrongly accused.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that would be amazing if there could be some kind of wave of encouraging art that was done even in some of these prison ministries. I don't know if it would be allowed, but
yeah,
that's where my mind went.
Yeah. That's amazing. Yeah. He certainly was a salesman. I heard it said that if he had 30 paintings that he was given in a day, he would sell 30 paintings in a day. And he was oftentimes driving around in a blue and white Ford Galaxy.
Okay.
And, as I know you already mentioned that he would fix the paintings.
I just thought that was fun.
But Mary Ann Carroll was quoted as telling NPR in a interview she did that the only paintings Black didn't sell was the ones you didn't give him.
Oh my gosh. So he was a good salesman.
Yeah.
He probably knew all the right places to take his galaxy to sell them. That's awesome.
And, you know, entrepreneurial they were. And so, as we mentioned early on, they were not coined as the highwaymen until later, in much later, past their
1995 is what I found.
Yeah. So Jim Fitch was a white Florida gallery owner, and he is recognized for coining the name based on their sales method, which That's we've right. described here. They're traveling up and down the highway to find buyers, and their use of that being their means to connect with customers. They were highwaymen.
That's right.
And women.
That's right.
So, yeah, we really have to give Jim Fitch the credit to
for the actual
bringing
name.
About the name. Yeah.
Yeah, it's so fitting. And he also said, somewhere I've heard it said that one sure road to success is to find a need and fill it. These black artists did just that. Whether we are willing to accept their work as art or not is an argument I won't make. I do know that by painting for the marketplace, they inadvertently created an awareness of and appreciation for Florida regional art, and they deserve recognition for that contribution.
That's awesome. They do. That's what we're wanting to do today.
Is That's to right. recognize Give them recognition them. For what they did. And yeah. I think if you're wanting to, if you look at those paintings, it will instill like just sweet feelings because it's palm trees and water birds and marshes. It's lovely.
So where can people see? I mean, we're going to link to some books, but yeah. if you want to actually go see it, can you see them?
There are places you can see them okay. today. So they're regularly exhibited at the A.E. Backus Museum in Fort Pierce.
Okay.
Also the Museum of Florida History in Tallahassee.
Okay.
And they have 18 paintings by various highwaymen, including Hare, Newton, Gibson, and Carroll. And there is a collection at the Smithsonian's National Museum of African American History and Culture in Washington, D.C.
Wow.
So that's, what was that, three places you can mm-hmm. see them today.
Cool.
And I'm keeping my eye out for them in places just in case. Yeah. I mean, obviously you're more likely to find them if you're in Florida, but there's got to be that they've spread.
Yeah.
Throughout. I tried to look some up online, like eBay and different things like that. And I found some, but once I clicked on it, they were already sold. But we're talking at this point, 3,500.
Wow.
That kind of thing.
Wow.
So it's kind of fun to see that there's at least now a recognition.
Wow. Well, I loved that I heard somebody mention or kind of categorize this as it was their version of the American dream with a tropical twist.
Oh, that's perfect. You know? I love that. Yeah.
So, anyway. Well, that was good highlight.
Totally different.
Culture.
Kind of fun topic.
Getting us all cultured.
That's so. Right. That's right. We want to talk about lots of parts of the Southern culture, that's not right. just a few.
And if anybody has one.
Oh, my gosh. Or access to one.
Post it. Please. Tag us so we can see it. Love to see if anybody has a piece of this work in their home or in their own studio or office. That's right. So
thanks y'all. That was fun.
Well, that's going to do it for this episode of the Steel Magnolias podcast. We hope you guys have a great week. Peace be with you.
And also with y'all.
Men, if you're ready to reclaim your edge, listen up. I used to be held back by constant bathroom trips with multiple wake-ups during my sleep and looking for restrooms whenever I was out. Then I discovered Better Man. After just 2 months, I started experiencing fewer trips to the bathroom, less urge to go, and I even slept through some nights. I feel a noticeable boost in my overall well-being, even sexual stamina. It gives me the freedom and confidence to live life on my terms. Better Man is clinically tested and trusted by thousands of men over 25 years. Ready to take back control? Go to BeBetterNow.com to order your supply today. That's BeBetterNow.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Use as directed. Individual results may vary.